your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Election's over, the president anyway, and we're approaching a new administration, but as President-elect Obama recently said, only one president at a time. However, that just allows more energy devoted to the problems needing his attention after January 20th. We all recognize the major topics getting notice and forethought. Much like the troubled sibling who keeps taking away our parents' attention. There's the economy, both wars, and insurance for all, demanding long-term discussion for long-term solutions. None of these issues will be solved by Obama making a one- or two-sentence statement and then signing it into law. Even if one- or two-sentence statements were possible by a lawmaker. But there are things that can be done quickly, laws that can be created with simple one- or two-sentence statements. I ask that Obama consider these. Halogen headlights on automobiles are hereby banned and must be replaced within 60 days. Helping one driver see better at the expense of blinding the oncoming driver is not okay. When someone in the automobile industry determines a method for both parties to benefit, halogen headlights will once again be allowed. The auto industry needs jobs. Removing, replacing, and reinventing headlights will at least be of short-term assistance. Continuation of the death penalty will be based upon a national initiative determined by popular vote. Do people really want our country to have a death penalty? Let's ask. I don't trust a typical state representative to represent anything more than their own wants. The champion of college football will be determined by an 8-team playoff. Someone will always be left out, but the way it's done now is ridiculous. Most prison sentences will be for murder, rape, and other physical assaults. Moral turpitude issues such as drug use will be punished monetarily and with community service. You can still make it all illegal if you choose, but prisons are overcrowded and our nation needs money and aid. Those not physically dangerous to others can help. Finally, everyone 12 and older must perform a minimum of 40 years community service. Let's try 40 hours of community service during a calendar year. Spend time with the elderly. We need to have more respect for our past. Work with the homeless, reminding ourselves these are just people with bad luck or having made poor decisions might help us with our own lives. Pick up litter along our roads and then try quietly accepting someone tossing a cigarette butt or beer can out their window. Help at your local animal shelter. Unconditional love can give you strength. All right, we'll see if he does any of those things. 11:05 here on the wake-up call. Speaking of community service, Dave Norris is in the room. Dave, how are you today?
I'm great, Rick. Good to be with you.
And thank you for coming in. Dave Norris, known as the Charlottesville City Mayor, here today as the executive director of, is it Patchum?
Patchum, Packham, you name it. Pacem, yeah. We answered it.
P-A-C-E-M. People and congregations engaged in ministry. I guess the first question, just to get out of the way, is do you get any grief or questions about the city mayor being involved and heavily involved in a religious organization?
I don't, and it's partly because even though Patchum is a interfaith organization, it's a faith-based organization, we have a very strict policy against proselytizing, evangelizing, whatnot. This is not an organization that tries to force religion down anybody's throats. We have 60 congregations now involved in Patchum, and that includes Muslims, Jews, Unitarians, Protestants, Catholics, the wide range. And we have many, many community volunteers that come by and help out our shelters who are not coming from a faith-based perspective. So it's not as if I'm involved in an organization that's trying to push religion. And even if I were, as long as there was a clear separation between my duties as executive director and my duties as mayor. We've had mayors of Charlottesville, at least one in my time here, who was a pastor of a church. And I think that's perfectly okay, as long as there's a clear separation between the duties.
And I would think that would be difficult, especially since we're going to spend the remaining hour sort of blending the two together. We're going to talk about Patchum and its current role in
right.
the community,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to sort of put you back in your role of Charlottesville City Mayor
mm-hmm.
and talk about social services and how that all comes together, especially with this, the hope, which has been heavily discussed and promised and certainly brought forward as a need
mm-hmm.
In the new presidential administration.
That sounds good.
So Patchum,
mm-hmm.
people and congregations engaged in ministry.
Right.
But the whole reason that I asked you on was that I guess this past week or the week before, I got two separate emails, not directed at me particularly about, hey, let's do a radio show on this, but mm-hmm. about the fact that what I assume to be the major part, the major goal of Patchum is about to kick into being. So let's start from the beginning. What is Patchum?
Sure.
How did it begin?
Patchum is, as I said, an interfaith, nonprofit community organization that was founded back in 2004 and has two overarching goals. One is to make sure that nobody in Charlottesville, no man, woman, or child has to sleep out on the streets of Charlottesville during the cold winter months. And thankfully, because of the contributions of the many congregations and individuals who have supported Patchum and been involved in Patchum for the last four winters, there hasn't been a single person that's had to sleep out on the streets of Charlottesville. And I don't know how many communities can say that. So the second overarching goal is, we also provide year-round advocacy and support to end homelessness in Charlottesville. And because our ultimate goal, I say this all the time, and I don't think people always believe me, but our ultimate goal is to put our shelter program out of business for lack of need. And I think that should be the goal of most, not every, but most nonprofit organizations, is to put themselves out of business, because the circumstances which created the need for their services have been eliminated. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen within the next year. It may not even happen within the next 2 years. But we know how to end homelessness, at least chronic homelessness. And we are working actively on solutions to homelessness so that we won't need our shelter program a few years from now. So those are the two sort of overarching goals. In the short term, we do this winter shelter program, which is a real wonderful program. And we have different congregations throughout the community, throughout the region, that take turns 1 or 2 weeks at a time from November to March, opening up their fellowship halls, their gymnasiums, their church basements, whatever, and opening up their hearts to the homeless. And we have a downtown intake site, Holy Comforter Church, and people that are homeless that need shelter can come there 7 nights a week between November and March from 5 to 6 p.m., gather, and we take them from there to whichever church is hosting us that week. We have two churches each night, two congregations each night, one hosting men and one hosting women. And the congregations serve a hot meal, give them a nice, safe, warm place to sleep. We have cots and sheets and pillows and blankets that rotate from congregation to congregation, and give them a breakfast in the morning. And then we have staff that are paid staff that supervise this all. And we also have staff that help connect people to resources in the community. So if they're looking for a job, if they need housing, if they need mental health treatment, substance abuse, clothing, transportation, veterans benefits, social services, we can help them get plugged into those services in our community. So we're not just providing a pillow for every head, which is our vision. That's our goal, a pillow for every head. But we're also providing opportunities for people to better their lives and get back on their feet.
Well, I would assume that, and this may be a poor assumption, that not too many of the volunteers are listening at the moment, because we're on during the church hour, and kind of you to come in to do so. We are talking with Dave Norris, people and congregations engaged in ministry, Pochum, where he's the executive director, also happens to be the Charlottesville city mayor. How do you get word out to the homeless? I mean, I don't know how many homeless folks also have radios that may be tuned to 91.9 at the moment.
Well, it's mostly word of mouth. And because we're now an established presence, people know about Pochum, and the word gets out on the street that when we're reopening our doors each winter, the word gets out that we're back in operation, and people come in. We also, of course, have, we have our tentacles out throughout the community in terms of the nonprofit and social service agencies that interact with the homeless on a daily basis, with the police, with the hospitals, other groups that interact with the homeless on a daily basis. They know that we're open now, and so they refer people to us. Our biggest source of referrals traditionally has been the Salvation Army, which runs a year-round homeless shelter up on Ridge Street. And when we were started, we were not started to compete in or to duplicate in any way what the Salvation Army does. But basically, there were a lot of people who did not meet the criteria to stay at the Salvation Army, or there are a lot of nights of the year that Salvation Army is full. And so the Salvation Army will have people come into their doors seeking shelter, and they won't be able to shelter them for whatever reason, and they'll refer them over to us. And so throughout a variety of means, people find out about us, and they make their way to Holy Comforter from 5 to 6 p.m. Last night we had 25 men and 3 women. We also get families on occasion that show up seeking shelter. It doesn't happen often, but if we have a family with kids comes in our doors, we'll try to get them into the Salvation Army shelter if we can. Try to find, if there's a family or friend, a family member or friend that they can stay with. And if they can't find anywhere to go, we will put them up in a hotel for a few nights until they can get back on their feet. We have to pay for that, but we do get a discounted rate from some of the area hotels. Our goal, again, is to make sure that nobody has to sleep out on the streets of Charlottesville during the cold months of winter. And, you know, it's there's many moving pieces to this machine that is Pachem, but it all comes together.
So you said you had 28 people last night.
Right. And that's and those numbers will increase as the winter comes.
Will they?
Yeah, we just opened a week ago. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Because that's, and I can't even begin to remember the numbers, but we've done shows here previously on the homeless situation in the area, and I forget what the Thomas Jefferson TJHPDC.
TJAC, Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless.
And that represents six or seven counties?
Five counties plus the city of Charlottesville.
Okay.
Right.
And the numbers are dramatically higher than 28 people.
Well, they do an annual point-in-time census where they go out and try to do a survey. They do surveys, and they try to find out how many people are homeless in our region. And their definition of homeless includes people who are staying in shelters, staying in transitional housing, people who are literally homeless that have no shelter, and those numbers are, last January, I believe it was around 250, 300 people that they counted who were, again, most of them living in shelters or living in transitional housing and some that were literally out on the streets. It's done in January of each year. So that is not a reflection of the number of people who are actually living out on the streets at any given time. We don't have in Charlottesville 250 people living out on the streets. Now if the federal government, being the federal government, has two entirely different definitions of homelessness.
And making me laugh.
So there's two different definitions of homelessness that they use. One has to do with people who are literally without shelter. So they're out on the streets, or I shouldn't say without shelter. They're without housing. So they're in shelters, they're in transitional housing, they're homeless out on the streets. That's the HUD, Housing and Urban Development definition of homelessness. The Education Department, Federal Department of Education, uses a much broader definition of homelessness, which reflects people who don't have housing of their own. So they may be in housing, but many of them are doubling up with friends or family members. They're staying in very unstable situations sometimes. And if you use that broader definition of homelessness, we have at any given time about 2,000 people in our region who are homeless. Most of them are staying with friends or family members. They're couch surfing. And the reason why the Education Department tracks those numbers is because they do the best they can, and our schools do the best they can, to keep kids, even if a child has nothing else in that child's life is stable, they at least try to keep that child in the same school as best they can throughout the school year, so they have something that's stable and consistent in that child's life. And so they will actually track a child as their parents are, or their mother or their father is, you know, going from hotel to cousin's house to aunt's house to they're floating around the community. They will track that child, and they will provide taxis. They will get a taxi over there and pick up the child and bring them over to the school to make sure that that child has something consistent going on in their lives. So 2,000 based on the broad definition, about 250 based on the HUD definition. And then if you're looking at actual people out on the streets of our community, it's at any given time, it's a few dozen, and then in the wintertime, thanks to Pachem, it goes down to single digits and some nights, hopefully, zero.
And I know that from the Thomas Jefferson District search for mm-hmm. finding the true homeless numbers, that they know where a lot of the homeless
sure.
go.
Yeah.
Does Pachem do that as well?
Well, we're the ones that help them find. We know where the camps are out in the woods. In the summertime, when we're closed, we try to keep track of where our sort of chronic our regulars are staying. And we know where a lot of the camps are. We know people, there's certain buildings they sleep in, or there's certain parts of town where they congregate.
Yeah, I mean, you can be driving down the road or come. I know that and I won't give anybody's away because a lot of these guys don't want you to walk up on them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see somebody who appears to be homeless sort of dive into the woods.
Right, right. Yeah. And, you know, we have a little documentary we did about Pachim a few years ago, and we're actually one of our, one of the long-time, unfortunately, chronic alcoholics in our community who has since passed, took the camera crew out into the woods and showed them one of the campsites. And it's very interesting to see how people are living out there when we're not open, when our shelter's not open.
Can people get that documentary?
You know, we're trying to figure out how to get it up onto YouTube. And if anybody can help me with that, I greatly appreciate it. It's about an 8-minute, your producer's raising his hand. By the way, I want to give you have a great guy here as your producer, Sean McCord, who I fully expect to be sitting in my seat someday as mayor of Charlottesville. So I don't know if Sean knows that.
But. Should I get an autograph now?
Get your autograph now. Anyhow, we have about an 8-minute documentary, and we'll try to get up on YouTube or somehow get it up onto our website. And if anybody wants more information about Pachim, by the way, our website, I have to give it in a little plug for our website. It's pachimshelter.org, P-A-C-E-M, shelter, one word, .org.
All right, 11:21 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about Pachim, people and congregations engaged in ministry and how they are helping the homeless during the calendar year, but especially now as we're in the colder months. This is Dave Norris, who is the executive director of Pachim, and he's also the Charlottesville City Mayor, and we're going to dive into social services in general and especially with the new federal administration in just a few moments. Let me take time and give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's sunny today, highs 50 to 55, a little chillier down in the valley. Partly cloudy tonight with lows 30 to 35. Ooh, even colder across in Stanton, Waynesboro, and down in Lynchburg. Partly sunny tomorrow, highs 45 to 50. Those Richmond folks will have a few extra degrees to work with. Right now in the valley, 44, 45 in Lynchburg, 53 in Richmond, 46 in Charlottesville, and clouds all across the listening area.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support for NRN today also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. This weekend, Blue Ridge Mountain Sports featuring savings on gear from the North Face. Details are in this week's Hook. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. They're at Wintergreen and at BRMS.com. Feel free to dial up and ask your questions or make your comments. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS if you need a toll-free number. And I think it's WNRN Studio if you're at home and would like to send us an AOL instant message. Dave, and again, Dave Norris here, executive director of Pachim, an organization that's devoted to helping the homeless in a variety of ways. I think some people, and this popped in my head earlier when you said that you are, that the organization attempts to do its best to make itself go away.
Sure.
But if I remember correctly, hasn't Charlottesville either done this or been accused of doing this, of not allowing sort of the homes that would allow help the homeless? By not, you know, sort of the not in my backyard issue?
Well, I think you may be referring to there was an issue last year with a shelter that had opened up in the middle of a residential neighborhood that was not zoned for shelter. It opened up in a building
that sounds like my vague memory.
Right. And that was an unfortunate, that was a very specific matter relating to the zoning for that particular building. I wouldn't say in general that, you know, Charlottesville is opposed to trying to solve homelessness. It's not necessarily on the top of everybody's priority list in City Hall, but that was an issue where the neighborhood was quite upset about the fact that a homeless shelter had opened up right across the street from a single family residences, and the neighborhood had been given no warning and was not consulted on whether that building would be used for a homeless shelter. I think the people in that neighborhood were very clear to say they want to support, you know, programs and facilities that would help end homelessness.
Just they not just, nearby.
Just not in a residential neighborhood. I don't want to get into the whole.
Well, I lived, I mean, within feet of the On Our Own building mm-hmm. for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, to many, never experienced a single problem.
Well, there's, I think, you know.
And for those who don't know, On Our Own is much like Pacham in a very smaller sense, where I don't believe that they had room for maybe six or eight single-digit numbers
four,
of folks.
I think they have four apartments there. But, yeah, it's there's a lot of myths and fears about homelessness, which unfortunately feed into some of the concerns that we hear from in certain quarters that, you know, homeless people are going to do all kinds of bad things. And the reality is you know, for instance, one statistic which I often cite, which is that homeless people are much more often the victims of crime than the perpetrators of crime. If anybody who's listening to your show here would ever like to come out and volunteer with us at Pacham, I think you will see that their eyes are opened to the realities of homelessness. This is one of the things that I think one of the real blessings of a organization like Pacham is that we expose people who may never have had an opportunity to sit down across the table and speak with a homeless person, and or play a game of cards with a homeless person, or sit and watch a movie with a homeless person. And every myth and stereotype and fear that they have about the homeless tends to fall by the wayside when they realize that, hey, you know, these people really aren't that much different from you and me. There, but for the grace of God, go I. You know, a lot of times people have a crisis in their lives, and, you know, thankfully you or I hopefully have a support network we can fall back on, but not everybody has that kind of support network, and they end up homeless, or they have a mental disorder that's completely outside of their control that causes them to enter into a downward spiral where they end up homeless, or they have an addiction, which again is outside of their control, which ends up causing them to be homeless. Very, very few people that walk in the doors of Pacham are there because they've made a conscious choice to be homeless. That's one of the myths we hear a lot. And the reality is that most of the people that we shelter are fundamentally good and decent people who've had a rough break in their lives. And many of them, you know, we have people that stay at Pacham just for one night or one week because they just need a short-term place to stay until they can get back on their feet. We have others that are going to be with us all winter long. And frankly, a good number of them should not be expected. If we had a good social safety net in this country, they should not be expected to live independently because they are struggling with, in some cases, pretty severe mental illness. And most societies wouldn't let people with severe mental illness try to fend for themselves because they would provide the supportive housing that we promised to provide when we deinstitutionalized the mentally ill in this country over the last 40 years. And yet we have not followed up on that promise. So come by Pacham sometime. And if anybody wants to volunteer and just come by and serve a meal or just hang out with our guests, you're certainly welcome and encouraged to do so. Our volunteer coordinator would love to hear from you. Her name is Adriana. And her number is 465-5093. If you ever want to come by, or you can email her at pachemga, P-A-C-E-M-G-A, @AOL.com.
Or at that website you gave out earlier.
Or you can find out about volunteer opportunities through that website, which is pachemshelter.org.
Dave Norris, Charlottesville City Mayor, Executive Director of Pacham, the People and Congregations Engaged in Ministry. You mentioned the phrase good social safety net.
Right.
So perfect for us to move into part two of the topic, although
right.
I do have a couple questions left on Pacham itself.
Okay.
Are there expectations for you personally, for you as the mayor of Charlottesville, for you as the director of PACHM, and the new administration, the promises that were made or certainly were led to believe may be instituted in the upcoming months or years during this new administration?
I mean, there certainly have been a lot of promises made, or at least commitments made. And, of course, the challenge with any new administration is going to be once they get into office and they realize the scope and breadth of the challenges before them, are they going to be able to follow through on the commitments that they've made? I, you know, personally, I'm taking off my PACHM hat, putting on my, not even my mayor hat, but my partisan hat, was proud to endorse. I was the first elected official in this whole area, in the whole, all of Central Virginia, to endorse Barack Obama for president. I was very happy to have done that back when Hillary Clinton was the presumptive Democratic nominee. and it's partly because this is a guy who understands the needs of cities. This is a guy who understands the needs of the middle class, who worked as a community organizer on the south side of Chicago, working with in some very tough situations where, you know, low-income neighborhoods were facing pretty severe challenges. He understands this stuff. And to have somebody with that kind of a background in the White House, I think, is going to be good for the whole country. But
he's just a community activist.
Just a community activist who has now the resources of the federal government at his disposal. So obviously he is not a one-man shop. He's got to continue to work with Congress. That's our system of government. But I think we're going to see some change. One of the things, I'll give you a specific example that I expect will be reversed, is this last administration has not been a friend of public housing, affordable housing, community development kinds of initiatives. They've been systematically cutting funding for communities like Charlottesville to be able to offer affordable housing and make sure we're maintaining our public housing stock. And so our housing stock is crumbling. Our public housing is crumbling, not just in Charlottesville, but all over the country. And they've been cutting funds for that in large part to help fund their military adventurism abroad. Senator Obama, now President-elect Obama, has committed publicly on several occasions to restoring those cuts. That's one specific item which is going to be a benefit to places like Charlottesville. One thing that the Bush administration did very well, and I'll give them a lot of credit for, was getting back to the issue of homelessness, was they took a new approach to homelessness that really focused on providing permanent supportive housing for the homeless versus kind of stringing them along and hoping that communities will pick up the slack and offer shelter. And the administration's point person on homelessness has been a real strong advocate going all over the country and encouraging communities to look at shelters as just a short-term fix, as a Band-Aid, and acknowledge that the ultimate solution is housing, permanent supportive housing for the homeless. Now, they haven't necessarily followed up with a whole lot of new money for that, and that's where I'm hoping Senator Obama will be able to shift the dialogue a little bit. But just the idea of acknowledging the need for housing for the homeless, I think, has been a big step forward. I think the president's faith-based initiatives program, which Senator Obama has pledged to continue, has been a good direction in engaging the faith community and to be a more proactive partner in some of these solutions. So there are some good things that are happening that need to be continued, but I think there's a lot more that can be done.
Dave Norris here, as we talk about PACHM and social services in general. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And we got a phone call. Don't be afraid to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Just like Marcus did. Hey, Marcus. Marcus, did you go away on me? Oh, well, Marcus decided to... I can hear it, Sean. If he calls back, just bring it on in. We had a problem with the... I can see it ringing again right now. Sean, just take Marcus's question, and we'll ask Dave just like that. So 979-0919 is ringing now. Dial the toll-free number, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me try again. Marcus?
No, it's not Marcus. It's someone else.
Hi, how are you? What's your name?
This is Susie.
Hi, Susie. Question?
I heard Dave speak to the fact that there's homeless shelters as well as transitional housing, and I was wondering if he could let the listeners know what the difference is between those two.
All right. Thanks.
That's a great question, Susie. Thank you for asking it. We have one main year-round homeless shelter in Charlottesville, the Salvation Army, which offers short-term accommodations. They're barrack-style accommodations with bunk beds in their shelter. And then they also operate, I believe, about 15 or 16 units of transitional housing, which are apartments. They're small apartments at the same site where somebody can stay for a longer term and have it's more like an independent living situation where they're still provided support services. There's still staff people there that help them find jobs, work through, you know, accessing services they need in the community. But it gives them a place that's a step up from a shelter, which is a very transitory environment, to a more permanent, a more permanent kind of living arrangement. We also have the Hope House, which is run by MACA, the Monticello Area Community Action Agency, which operates 4 units of transitional housing for women who are formerly homeless to have children, give them a place where they can stay. The Trinity Episcopal Church on Preston Avenue also operates a transitional housing facility for somebody that's been for a woman that's and kids that have been staying at the Shelter for Help and Emergency, which again is a short-term shelter. This is a place where they can go after they've been in the short-term shelter to be able to transition back to independent living. So there's programs like that. You could also consider the Piedmont House over there on Route 20, which is you could consider that transitional housing as well. It's a facility that provides short-term stays for recently released offenders, not nonviolent offenders. So give them a sort of a bridge from their time in incarceration back to the community where they can stay, work on getting a job, getting back on their feet. That's basically transitional housing. It's a step up from a shelter. We need more of it for all categories of people that are coming out of either coming out of a shelter, coming out of a prison facility, to give them the support they need to get back on their feet. Yeah, we need more of it.
979-0919 for your question. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Dave Norris here, currently with his hat on as Charlottesville City Mayor, also known as the Executive Director of PACHM. Dave, we seem to be talking about the social services aspect, mm-hmm. our new federal administration, or our upcoming new federal administration with President-elect Barack Obama. The homeless seems to be what we've been talking about, and you even gave credit to the Bush administration for some of the things that you feel that they did in a helpful manner. Is that at the top of your list in terms of social services and what needs to come next?
At top of my list as mayor, you mean?
As social services money, as social service rewritten laws or focus from the Barack Obama administration?
Well, I think what needs to be top on the list is getting America back to work. And we have we're obviously hemorrhaging jobs right now. I think there's a lot of insecurity out there among the working class, among the middle class, among actually all sectors of society. And we need to really restore confidence in the American economy, because we can talk about, homelessness is not an isolated phenomenon. The economic stresses that we're all under, I mean, it will surely increase homelessness, but it's affecting a much broader swath of the American people. And I think that needs to be priority number one, is how do we restore confidence and a sense of economic security in this country? How do we bring jobs back to this country? How do we provide the kind of jobs that are going to allow people to climb the ladder, to enter the middle class, to retire with a pension, send their kids to college? Right now, look at a place like Charlottesville, where we have lost thousands of manufacturing jobs here in the last 10 years. And the jobs that we've been gaining are retail and service sector jobs. That is not a good trade-off for our local economy. So even though our unemployment rate is very low compared to many other places here in Charlottesville, our wages have been stagnant because we're trading off decent-paying manufacturing jobs for low-paying service and retail jobs.
And my understanding from friends who are in past years have counted on a second part-time job for the holiday work, those aren't available this year because the belief is that upcoming holiday sales will be stagnant or lesser. Mm-hmm. And so even the retail and sales jobs are not there.
Sure, sure. So I think, whatever extent that President-elect Obama can pull together, a top-notch team of experts and cabinet officials and congressional leaders to pull the economy out of the slump we're in, and it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to happen overnight. But I think that he's acknowledged publicly that's his top priority. And there's some really creative ways to you can help, not to solve that problem, but help to address that problem. But that also get at some of the other challenges that we're facing as a nation. You look at energy policy, which he put front and center in his campaign, partly because not only does it get at some of the economic issues we're talking about. How do you create jobs by investing in a new green energy economy? But it also is a national security issue when we're so heavily dependent on oil from places like the Middle East, and we end up choosing to invest hundreds of billions of dollars and many thousands of American lives in protecting that flow of oil when we could instead be investing in local and domestic production of energy and renewable energy. It's a national security issue. It's an economic issue. And of course, it's an environmental issue.
Now, is that a social service issue?
Well, it becomes a social service issue when you have, if he follows through on this commitment of creating 5 million new green energy jobs in this country, the best... This will sound like a real cliche, but I happen to believe it's true. But the best anti-poverty program in the world is a well-paying job. And if we can create well-paying jobs for people who may not have college degrees, who may not have master's degrees, this is what the manufacturing economy used to do for people, which we've shipped that economy overseas now. But if we can create those well-paying jobs, and there's places, many communities now are waking up to the promise of green jobs. There's this really creative program out in, I believe it's in Oakland, California, where they're training inner city youth and young adults in installation of solar panels and other sort of, and training them in green building technologies, because this is where the investments are happening. And if you can take somebody and train them for this new economy, I think that makes all the difference. So it's a way of having to avoid needing social services, because if you can get somebody into a good paying job, public works is another one. And I know we're running short on time here, but public works, where we need to rebuild our infrastructure in this country, and that's cuts across from bridges to roads to transit to parks to you name it, schools. We need to rebuild our infrastructure, and that also is a great way to create jobs and reduce the pressure on the social services system. So
You sound like T. Boone Pickens, by the way. All right, 11:44 in the wake-up
call. I
wish
I had 1/100th of his money. So.
I got Mark on the line. Mark, please hold on. I have to do this real quick. 11:44 in the wake-up call with Dave Norris.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, it's not official, but 5th District candidate Tom Perriello is poised to unseat 6th-term Congressman Virgil Goode in what may be one of the greatest political upsets of our time. The Hook takes a look. Greene County has been growing quickly, and while some are grateful for the new homes and shopping opportunities, one homeowner says the massive projects have taken the water right out of his waterfront property. And while many spend fall raking up the leaves, at least one person says you should leave them where they are. Those old rotting leaves do more than you think. The Hook, your Thursday medication. And don't go anywhere, because at noon, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Perdue. That's late 80s through 90s alternative tunes. Be here for it at noon. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right. I just got to push all the right buttons. We got Mark from Charlottesville. Hey, Mark, still there?
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for hanging on. Question, comment?
Oh, well, I guess the last couple minutes, the mayor was speaking about jobs and coming to Charlottesville and or high-paying jobs for Charlottesville. And what I was trying to, what I was thinking about was he was speaking of jobs in the service sector, and I believe it was a couple weeks ago a caller called in and he said something to the effect that maybe the citizenship or, I guess, the nationalities of lots of the workers that do all the service jobs in Charlottesville seem to be from the South, and I was just wondering if there was any action put in place to keep the jobs that can be in America for American citizens. And I'll just hang up and let you speak about that.
And he's right, Dave. You know, I won't take it for granted that you were listening, but on a previous show, we did have a caller who, you know, to stereotype the question or comment was that he said, why are all these immigrants taking our jobs away? If that weren't the case, then more Americans would have jobs.
Well, if you're talking about illegal immigrants, I mean, that's a separate issue versus...
I don't believe that that caller, and not Mark, but right. I don't believe that that caller from previous Sundays really made any... I'm sure that he referred to illegal immigrants, but when you drive down the street and you see people who you might believe to be illegal immigrants because they do have a Hispanic ethnic, you know, look right, to right. them, that you... some people assume that they must be illegal immigrants.
Right. Well, I think if you would ask local employers why they're hiring immigrants, illegal or otherwise, why they're hiring immigrants to fill these jobs, they would probably tell you because they haven't been able to fill these jobs from the ranks of non-immigrants. Now, obviously, we have... a lot of non-immigrants who are working here in Charlottesville. Our unemployment rate is low. But you know, I think you're seeing this phenomenon in many other parts of the country as well. I'm not going to delve into all the issues behind that are driving immigration. But those jobs are not necessarily the well-paying jobs that I was talking about. What I'm really more interested in are the kind of jobs that are going to help, somebody who's living in Charlottesville, who's trying to raise kids in Charlottesville, who's right now having to work two or three jobs to get by, to afford the cost of living here, to afford the cost of housing here, who wants to be able to send their kids to college, who wants to retire on a pension, who right now is struggling to get by. And we have, I don't think, done as an aggressive job as we could in making sure that those opportunities for people like that to climb the ladder are there. And one of the big gaps that we've identified has to do with workforce development, which is not only how do we, you know, how do we find the employers and encourage the kind of business development that's going to create the jobs that I'm talking about, but how do we prepare our residents for those jobs and make sure, you know, we have 5,000 adults in the city of Charlottesville alone, which only has a population of about 41,000, 5,000 adults who don't have a high school diploma. That's not a path to economic success in this country. And so how do we capture kids at a younger age before they drop out of school? How do we help adults who don't have a diploma to go back and get their GED, to get the skills that they need to climb the ladder? I think the immigration issue is too often used by politicians like me, although I try not to use, but by politicians generally to drive a wedge between between the different components of the working class. And I'm not interested in driving wedges. And I'm not saying your caller was asking me to drive, but it's not about driving a wedge. It's about it's about providing opportunities.
And
for,
it sounds
for
like
all.
Another social service issue that the Obama administration needs to look into as during their 4 years.
Yeah.
All right. Marcus has dialed us back up. Marcus, are you with me this time?
I am. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I pushed the wrong button many times. Question or comment for Dave Norris?
Well, first of all, Mayor Norris, I want to thank you for the work that you've done with the homeless, and I admire you for that, and, you know, others should get out there. I myself volunteer for Habitat for Humanity and, you know, several other things in Charlottesville. I tend to disagree on you on a few things. I feel like Charlottesville is kind of moving in a direction of speaking of partisanship again, I wasn't an Obama supporter, but that doesn't make me a racist or anything like that. But I feel like that Charlottesville should be looking more into social services and looking more into education as opposed to building and coming up with the money to build a bunch of new affordable housing. What I see a lot of times when we go out to, you know, help these individuals that need help in affordable housing or public housing is that there's a lot of them out there that are on the welfare program or other programs that are out there. And I feel like that a lot of the taxpayers are being taken advantage of with some of these people because they're not, being pushed to go out to get a job, to being pushed to go out and find the education that they may not have had. And I think that we need to look more into the, you know, helping these people with some social services issues or some education issues as opposed to giving them affordable housing and not making them accountable for the taxpayers' money that they're using right now. And like I said, once again, I'm not a racist whatsoever, and I'm not trying to take it in that direction. I'm afraid that a lot of people did during the election, and that's not the direction I want to take it in, but I just wanted to hear your comments about that.
All right. Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's a very, you know, legitimate concern that people have. They want to make sure that people aren't just being given things. You know, it's like that old adage about give you a fish and versus teach you how to fish. Most of the housing programs that I've certainly supported and been involved in have not been giveaways, have not been freebies. Even public housing, you have to pay rent in public housing. I think there's a misperception out there that people live in public housing for free. In fact, as your income increases, your rent increases. Most of the affordable housing, Habitat for Humanity, Piedmont Housing Alliance, the other groups that are providing affordable home ownership, those people, you know, those participants are paying mortgages. They're not talking about subsidizing sloth, which is, I think, Marcus's concern. The reality is the welfare system in this country changed dramatically under President Clinton. We don't have people now that are, we have very strict time limits now and other limits on public assistance that we didn't have years ago. The assistance that we have there now is primarily structured to encourage work and to help people get back on their feet. And the reality is most people in public housing are working. Unless you're elderly or disabled, but most people that are working, that are living in public housing are working. They are working those service and retail jobs that help this local economy function, that allow us to do the things that we want to do in our daily lives. Now I want to get back to another issue though, which is I think Marcus and I might see eye to eye on the fact that social service, the social safety net in this country, and social services does not necessarily mean government-provided services. And I've always said that I don't believe that government is the answer to every problem. And in fact, I think oftentimes the nonprofit community and the faith community and others do things better than government does. They do things more efficiently, and they're more in tune with the needs of residents who are receiving services. Not always, but oftentimes.
Well, let me ask you a question, because we've jumped around from the social services aspect mm-hmm. to the PACHM, mm-hmm. Which is more of a individual and religious, I think it's, ministry, congregations, people and congregations engaged in ministry,
right?
Which is what we started with. Is religion put forth to the users of this organization?
No, absolutely.
I mean, if you come in because you need to stay, is, you know, you get your bed, your pillow, your
right.
sheets,
mm-hmm.
and do you get your booklet, you know, your flyer on the truth?
No, and it absolutely not. And partly the reason is because we wouldn't know on any given night which religious or faith tradition to proselytize. I mean, we have, on any given night, we have Baptists working alongside Methodists, working alongside Jews, and working alongside Muslims, working alongside Unitarians, Quakers, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Episcopalians, Catholics, you name it, all working together to make this thing happen. And so we wouldn't know. That would be a pretty big booklet. So we don't allow proselytizing. It's not part of the work. When we say ministry, it's not about preaching, and it's about ministering in the most basic sense of that word, ministering to the needs of people. And we do, if people want to participate in a, you know, if they're staying at a Baptist church that week that wants to offer a Bible study, it's totally voluntary, and they're welcome to do it, but we don't force it down anybody's throats.
All right, let me do this real quick, and then I got what may be the last phone call of the day. You are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg, and one of the reasons the wake-up call was on the air is because of the support we received from 45fix.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate no obligation estimates available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. Andy, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you. Question or comment for Mayor of Charlottesville and Executive Director of PACHM, Dave Norris.
I have a comment I would like to make, and it's based upon the last conversation that y'all had about the prophetizing and the different religions. I am able to be lucky, and I am a worker or an employee of PACHM, and I spent this last weekend helping take care of the gentleman in the during the night. And several of the men mentioned this morning how happy they were that they could come to stay with us over the night and not be, quote, hammered with any pamphlets, brochures, and different types of religion. And we had a long discussion with about 4 or 5 gentlemen how some people like to enjoy Mother Nature as a religion or the ocean. I mean, it sounds a little odd, but we all agree we have spirituality, but not exactly a religion-based, but they were feeling more and more religious because they had places to go to, and it was just so wonderful to hear that and to let people know that I myself have learned a lot being with PACHM. And I thought I knew a lot about the community and those less fortunate than myself, but I have to say it's an ongoing education.
Andy, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Y'all have a good morning.
Thank you, Andy.
All right, Dave, we have about a minute and a
all
half
right.
left.
Can I spend 20 seconds of it on a quick pitch? Because
I had somebody call who wants the phone number for PACHM.
Okay,
as well.
I'll do that right now. PACHM receives no local funding. We do get about 10% of our funds from a state and federal shelter grant, but 90% of our funding, roughly, comes from individuals, businesses, and congregations and local foundations. And so we are heavily dependent on the generosity of people who may be listening right now on your show. So I hope people will consider PACHM, making a donation to PACHM. We don't have a very large budget, but we do have to pay our staff and cover our shelter operating expenses. If anybody would like to donate to PACHM, they can go make a secure, safe, quick, and easy online donation at our website, pachmshelter.org. They could send us a check to P.O. Box 14, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22902, P.O. Box 14. That's PACHM, P-A-C-E-M. If anybody has any questions, they can call me, 465-1391. Or if they want
What's your email? Your email was pretty simple, too.
Cville Dave, CVILLEDAVE, at hotmail.com. And if they want to volunteer, again, our volunteer coordinator, Adriana, at 465-5093, or PachamGA at AOL.com.
A quick follow-up. You talk about the funding, and then Drew's going to take over here.
Okay.
Business donations do not have to be religiously come from religious companies, correct? I mean, you take food, you take all those things.
Blue Ridge
right?
Design, who you mentioned earlier, is a supporter of your show, is a supporter of PachamGA. They do some of our graphic work. I mean, we have many businesses that have been involved in PachamGA, and we're quite grateful for that. So.
All right. Dave Norris, Charlottesville City Mayor, as we talked about, Social Services, Executive Director of PachamGA, People and Congregations Engaged in Ministry, as we talked about PachamGA. Starting up now for the cold weather to provide shelter, a pillow for every head.
A pillow for every head.
For the homeless this winter. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you, Rick. It's been a real pleasure.
Next week we'll have Professor Smith from the McIntyre School of Commerce coming on to do our show on what the hell is wrong with the economy. All right. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.